Welcome to episode 324 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing Benjamin Kazulk, who just directed a cool film called Banana Split, starring Hannah Marks. He started working in the industry in post-production and got to know a lot of the indie filmmakers in Seattle and started his career that way as a cinematographer. So we talked through that transition. Benjamin was the cinematographer on a film called Safety Not Guaranteed, which was a big indie hit. So we talked briefly about that film as well. So stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast, and then just look for episode number 324. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I'm interviewing director Benjamin Kazulk. Here is the interview. Welcome, Benjamin, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get interested in the entertainment industry?
Sure. Yeah. I grew up way, way up in the Adirondack Mountains in northern New York in this little tiny town of about 5,000 people called Saranac Lake. It's very cold and very high up and very remote. And I grew up watching a lot of VHS tapes during very, very cold, long winters. And I didn't even know you could be in the film industry. I thought it was just a thing that happened and you watched movies that, you know, and I didn't know it was like a way to be an adult. And then I was touring a bunch of colleges and looking at all sorts of different places to go to school. And then I stumbled into this film department on a tour of Ithaca College and had no idea you could go to school for film. I had no idea you could get a degree in film. And in my brain, I guess the next jump was, oh, if you can get a degree in this, maybe you can have a job in this. Maybe you can do this for a living. And then one thing sort of led to another. And then I went to film school and I ended up going to Ithaca and I got out and I had jobs in negative cutter for a long time. And then while I was cutting negative, I started to meet local filmmakers in Seattle where I moved and I started shooting a lot of stuff for filmmakers because I knew how to shoot 16mm film. And I started shooting small projects and I kind of became this guy who shot a lot of these weird sort of short modern dance short films in Seattle. There was a whole scene of filmmakers up there that were doing that. And eventually the short films got longer and longer and then they became features and then there became more features and shooting lots of features and then started directing features and TV and here we are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So a slow, long journey. No, that's a good, a good summation. So, one thing I definitely would like to touch on, because I know I get a lot of screenwriters that maybe come at this from a different angle, and they're always wondering, you know, how can I branch out? How did you make that leap from DP to director? Did you just have to go out and shoot a short as a director, self-finance it, and kind of get that calling card? Were you able to actually take your DP experience and get paid to direct that first project? Maybe talk about that transition just a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I never wanted to stop shooting. I love it. I'll do it until I can't anymore. I'll do it till my body gives out. But I knew I wanted to direct some stuff. I'd been around a lot of directors that were really good at their jobs and taught me a lot and showed me how it was a gratifying experience, you know, as a storyteller. But I didn't know how to make it happen. But I kind of kept putting it out there that I wanted to do it. I knew that if I sort of put the word or tried to manifest it somehow out in the world, that it would happen. And so, I've worked with tons of people, but over the years, there's been like maybe 20 directors that I've worked with over and over and over again. And I started to make it known that I kind of wanted to do this. And it sounds kind of weird and almost new agey or something, just like manifest this thing for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how to, I had to work constantly to just make ends meet. As I was shooting all the time, and when you're shooting films, you're working all the time. So there wasn't time to like say, hey, I'm taking 8 months off. I'm going to write a screenplay and then myself and make a tiny budget film. Like, that wasn't really an option because I just wasn't making that kind of money. I wasn't, you know, I'm just not in that tax bracket of a filmmaker. And I think a lot of people aren't. That's rare. So what did happen though is like over the years I'd get like, I lived in Seattle and I knew a lot of bands without a lot of money that wanted to make like a little video. They only had a couple $1,000, but hell, I knew how to do that. You know, I'd worked on tons of tiny movie, like feature films that cost just a little bit more than that. And so I would do music videos here and there, or, you know, I worked a lot, and I think your screenwriters will probably find this, especially people starting out. I worked a lot with first time directors and, you know, in helping someone direct for the first time, you get to teach them things that may have worked in other situations with other directors, and all of a sudden it's kind of like, wait, if I know this and I'm teaching somebody else to do this, I know how to do this myself. Like, a lot of that confidence starts to build. And I think that with screenwriters, I'm sure you're probably seeing people that have to do problem solving on the fly, mm-hmm. you know, that wrote an episode of something, or wrote a screenplay of something, and when it gets on set, it just doesn't work, or it has to be adapted for an actor, or it has to be adapted for a dramatic beat, or it has to be adapted for a location. And, you know, all of a sudden they're having to think on the fly and having to go really fast and having to problem solve for a first time director. And like, I think that would happen on the cinematography end of it. I'm sure it happens all the time on the screenplay end of it, but, you know, this Banana Split as a first feature came around because I knew Hannah Marks, who's the exec producer and the co-writer and the star of it. And it's sort of an autobiographical film, but, you know, a lot of it was sort of right place, right time. But like, Hannah and I were both at the Sundance Feature Film Labs. I was there as a cinematographer and she was there as an actress, and we were working on the same project about 12 years ago now. And 10 years ago now. And we became friends. We had similar sensibilities and we were both kind of in this industry. And we just stayed in touch and kind of sent each other stuff that we were working on. And she would send screenplays and short film ideas. And I would send her like, you know, trailers for things I was working on, or like tell her I was, you know, we'd always see who was working with who and who liked, you know, who liked who they were working with, who was a fun collaborator. She, you know, one day she had the script for Banana Split and she was like, hey, I will you read this? I just want to know what you think. And I thought this, you know, over the years we'd read each other's stuff. I thought she just wanted notes. And so I read it and I thought, you know, like, I don't have a lot of notes. This is really funny. This is really smart. And this is really kind of wise beyond its years. And I'm not sure what to tell you, Hannah. I think it's great. I think you're going to do a good job with it. And she's like, actually, I'm busy on my other film. And she was co-directing a film that she co-wrote with Joey Power. And she co-wrote Banana Split with Joey Power. And she was finishing up a film called After Everything and was full on sprinting to the finish line to get it done in time for South by Southwest that year. And she knew that she wanted to make Banana Split and that she wanted to be in it. And that she felt like she only had so much time as an actress to play high school age, without any real suspension of disbelief on the audience behalf. So we kind of had to move fast. And, but I think as far as like, you know, if you're someone out there that's writing screenplays, I think it's like you have to be around. You have to, and like, as a cinematographer, it's easy to be around people that are making stuff because you're on set. Mm-hmm. It's harder as a screenwriter, like, show up on set all the time, or it's not an overly social job unless you're in a writer's room. So I think you have to kind of find ways to show up. And like Hannah, I knew because of Sundance and the Feature Film Labs, but the only reason I was able to go to the Feature Film Labs is because I went to the Sundance Film Festival over and over again with movies. And I didn't get into the Sundance Film Festival with any movies until I'd been making movies that played at other smaller festivals for a really long time. And I had this teacher years ago who was like, who just said, if you're in a profession and there's any kind of a conference, just show up, just go talk to whoever, like, just see what people are working on. And I really think it's like, it's a matter of, just being there, being around, being a person, and not like not just someone on the other end of a cold email or someone on the other end of an IMDb credit. It's sort of making yourself accessible, and it's hard. Like I think some people are socially, it's hard to put yourself out there. It's hard to feel like it's the right thing to do, especially if I think there's a little sort of badge of honor with writers and screenwriters where it's like, if you get a certain number of pages per day, that's your work day. Mm-hmm. And usually that involves like holding up somewhere and doing that on your own. I think if you write anything, even the tiniest short, and it goes to a festival and you can go, you should go. Yeah. You should talk to everybody. And all of a sudden you'll be like the person that was there with that movie that somebody remembered having a conversation with. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what happened with Hannah and I. It's like, we were just in the same place at the same time. And we just showed up. And, it took a long time, but 10 years later, she knew that because I had shot her in this pretty emotionally tricky role that was difficult to, just a difficult acting for her. And she knew that as a cinematographer, I helped sort of set the tone on set with our director to make her feel comfortable. She knew that I would hopefully be able to make her feel comfortable in an autobiographical comedy about her life years later.
So a lot of what you're saying is excellent advice. And I come on this podcast and I always try and emphasize, like, people, oftentimes writer directors, they've done a bunch of shorts to kind of get their feet wet. I'm curious, as someone who was on the trenches in Seattle, you're outside of Los Angeles, most of the listeners of this podcast, they're outside of Los Angeles. How do you meet those people? These directors, you're the cinematographer. How are you meeting these directors, 10, 12, 15 years ago in Seattle? Were you joining local filmmaking cooperatives? Were you joining Facebook groups? Maybe you can just give our audience just advice. How can they network with the up and coming producers and directors in their city?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest things that helped me in Seattle at the time were, I had a job at the Negative Cutter, so I was working in post production, and I.
And what's a Negative Cutter? Just for our audience, what does a Negative Cutter do?
Back in the day, when people shot on film, shoot film, there'd be a negative that came out of your camera. And you would transfer that negative to video or transfer that negative to a film print, and you would work off of a smashed up version of the images that you shot that were struck from your original camera negative while your camera negative was stuck in a vault for safekeeping. And you would edit your film either digitally, like we do now on computers, or on a flatbed on a work print. And then when the time came to make a film print, you would take that original camera negative, that is true version, the cleanest possible version of your film. You would take that film stock and you would actually cut it frame for frame to match your edit, and then send that out to have the film print made. And so I did that, a couple different iterations of that job. It's really technical. It's very clean. You work in a room without any natural sunlight with white gloves on and lots of music, and I had a bunch of really good friends, and we were jammed in a room in Seattle, and we just played music and cut people's movies together. And I did that for years. And what that did was there was a lot of local filmmakers in Seattle, and I think the way that people don't really cut negative that much anymore these days. It's mostly you see that as film archives and film restorations, and we did some of that too. But what it did do was put me in a city that wasn't New York or LA, job that had me in the film industry, and it was sort of adjacent to really creative work, but it was still in the film industry, and it got local filmmakers in the door, and it got me to a point in their filmmaking cycle where they were really just taking their final technical steps towards their final film prints and the final version of what people were going to see. And so they weren't, people weren't really super stressed. They weren't in a rush. They had time to talk. And I made some of my best, earliest film friends that way. So I think that's how I met Megan Griffiths, the director I worked with a lot. Lynn Shelton, director I worked with for a long time. That's sort of how we met. They had a project and it needed to be finished, and I worked at the place that finished it. And one day they would walk in the door, and I could be like, I've watched your movie 10,000 times. I love it, And I know how to shoot movies. Like I know how to expose film. I think it was, that was the professional of it. And then from there, plus cities that aren't New York or LA, is that they have really avid film going, like rep art house cinema kind of stuff. And Seattle's really good with that. places like Seattle, Boston, Chicago, Austin, Portland, Oregon. Like there's places, there's film societies, there's rep cinemas, there's places where people gather socially to go watch movies. And like that, you'll find regulars at those places. I guarantee if you show up at those screenings in your hometown over and over again, you'll see the same 20, 25 people. And some of those people want to be filmmakers. And if you live in a place that's not as expensive as New York or LA, sometimes there's extra time to make things. And if you're a screenwriter, that's a really specific skill set. It's hard. It's hard to do. It's really hard work. And there's a certain self-discipline that a lot of people aren't wired genetically to have. And so, you know, I would say to the listeners out there, like, if you start to see people that have the same taste as you, that even have an inkling of wanting to make something, offer your services. You know, anything is hard to write, but a 5-page short is not as hard to write as a 220-page miniseries, you know, and people are probably not going to start making the 220-page miniseries. Like, you might be able to volunteer a couple days per month to really get a 5-page short in good order, you know, and there might be somebody to them that's impossible. Like, I can write. I write all the time, but I don't like it. I don't enjoy it in a way that my screenwriter friends do, where they're like, I'm not going to talk to anybody for 4 days. I'm going in a hole. Then I'm going to come out the other end with like this great screenplay. Like, I wish I could do that, but they wish they could shoot a film. They wish they knew how to light something for, you know, a night exterior that looks normal. and so I would say, you know, be around, show up, find those communities in your town and make it known that you know how to do what you do and that you're dedicated to it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, excellent advice. I'm curious. Okay, so you had this this relationship with Hannah, sounds like ongoing relationship for many, many, many years. You read the script, you gave some notes. I'm curious, how did you then broach the subject of, hey, well, could I be a director, or did she approach you? And then what were those next steps to actually start raising money for this?
Yeah, I mean, she approached me as far as, like, you know, I'm looking for somebody to direct it. And I think for her, it was something as simple as, this is a really emotionally vulnerable kind of story for me. And Ben, I know that you took care of me when we were doing this, you know, 10 years ago at the Sundance Lab. I think for her, it was fairly practical. And that she, as a friend, she knew I was trying to kind of manifest this opportunity for myself. So it all kind of lined up. And I think also I had enough experience on sets of multiple sizes, you know, big budget movies, middle budget movies, tiny budget movies, big budget TV, tiny TV. Like, I'd sort of done all that stuff. So on paper for a production company, I wasn't somebody that didn't know how a day-to-day film set was run. And I wasn't somebody that didn't understand that 12 hours can go really fast if you waste time on a day on set. So, like, that kind of stuff had all sort of lined up. As far as the money, you know, Hannah had sort of talked to me about coming on. I really wanted to do it. She, at the time, the film was with a company, Later, and they were based out of Boston, and I knew a few of the people involved with Burn Later. We met up at South by Southwest that year, and everything started to feel pretty good, but we were having a tricky time trying to attach a cast that was quote-unquote name enough to get us the money that we needed to get going. But we were working, and Burn Later was really, really great about everything, but it was just kind of slow going. And then sort of out of nowhere, my agency put me in touch with this guy named Jeremy Gerlich, who is a producer and a writer director. He was producing, and he made a company up in Syracuse, New York, called American Indie, and also American High. They're both sort of the same place. And they were making high school movies. And he didn't know anything about my attachment to Banana Split. He just wanted to meet me through our agents because he was doing this thing in Syracuse. He had found out that I was from Syracuse, New York originally. I was born there, but when I was 4, we moved up to this tiny town up in northern New York. But I still had family around Syracuse. And we went out to dinner, and he was just like, here's what I'm doing. And he had a fund put together. He was making X amount of movies over a certain amount of time. He wanted to do it in Syracuse because there were high school movies that he felt like he wanted to feel like they could be kind of almost anywhereville America. And Syracuse as a city has a lot of different sort of architectural styles to it, and it could kind of double for almost anywhere. And so he was really trying to woo me into going to Syracuse to shoot this movie, to shoot a couple movies in a row. He's like, I'm looking for somebody that does, you know, might have family back there, might be heading back there at some point. Any interest you might have in like coming to make some movies with us there. And I was like, no, I got, you know, I'm attached to direct this thing. I'm trying to work on that. And he said, oh, well, what's the movie? And it turned out that he had read the Banana Split screenplay. And he's like, well, we have an open slot in our production slate. So let's talk to Burn Later. And so, you know, the guys at Burn Later who had the movie, Hannah, myself, Jeremy, and Joey Power, who was the co-writer, we all ended up talking. And Burn Later agreed to let American High, this company up in Syracuse, take over. And they already had their money in place. Like, Jeremy had already set up a whole system to make a bunch of movies up in Syracuse. So, you know, it wasn't a ton of money, mm-hmm. but it was there. And so we went from, you know, Hannah had asked me in maybe February of 2017, I think, if I wanted to direct this thing. Yes, I met the crew at South by Southwest in March that year at Burn Later. We looked for maybe 6 to 8 weeks, and then I met Jeremy. And then Jeremy and Burn Later, they figured out a deal within a month, and then we were up and running for that year. So it was incredibly fast. Yeah. And from my perspective of like, hey, buddy, you're going from zero to directing a feature. It was incredibly fast. For Hannah, she'd been shopping it around for four and a half years at that point, mm-hmm. and she lived it 5 years before that point, you know. So like, there was a lot of gestation for her with that movie. She'd been trying to get it made in different ways, shapes, and forms. I think she'd been with Burn Later for at least a few months before I even came into the picture. But you know, that's the short version. The long version is what we had talked about. Like, I graduated film school. I took mm-hmm. this job that wasn't quite what I wanted to do, but it got me close to people that were doing what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then one thing sort of led to another. Eventually I was doing mostly what I wanted, which was shooting, but there was this, you know, this desire to direct. Yeah. And I had to sort of kind of put it out there over and over again. And luckily a friend in Hannah saw that there was a need to direct, and also yeah. had worked with me. And, you know, so it's, the long answer was, there was 15 years of yeah. work that didn't feel like it was going to lead up to it. The short answer was that, you know, from February to October, it was pretty fast for a first yeah. feature film.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to ask one question. This is sort of a perspective question. You were the DP on Safety Not Guaranteed. I think Safety Not Guaranteed is one of those films that it's kind of a quintessential successful indie film. It was well received by critics and fans. I'm curious, as you were working on that film, did anything feel different about it? Was there something magical about it, or just it was another job, and as the DP, you didn't see anything necessarily different in the approach or the material or the acting?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a good call. What was really fun about that, working with Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly and Duplass and Aubrey Plaza, what was kind of great about working with all them is that, like, we all knew the look and feel of the indie movie we came out of, which was handheld and scrappy and looks, you know, it's lit, but it's lit to seem very natural. It's lit to seem like it's a world that's inhabited by people that you know. And we knew that that was where the beginning and most, maybe the first two thirds of Safety Not Guaranteed were going to live in that world. But what was awesome was that we knew at some point it had to turn into like a Spielberg Amblin movie. And we couldn't let anybody know that that's where it was going to head. So if you watch that movie, it's like in the beginning, you're kind of like, I get this. This is like, there's some smart Duplass. Like, it looks like a Duplass Brothers movie. It's a lot of the same crew that's worked on the Lynn Shelton movies. Like, it looks like a low budget, scrappy movie. And that's the intent. But mm-hmm. what was super fun in making that movie is that, like, we knew that at the point where it starts to become clear that, like, maybe Mark's character is not just this crazy guy, and that there's like props and blueprints and things that start to look like technology that might actually work, the movie starts to look more and more like Explorers or, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Or like, we were able to bring in references that were bigger than what we could have hoped for when the budget of the movie is $25,000 and you're borrowing all the equipment from the like art school where your director is working to pay their bills,
Yeah. I'm curious, too, I always like to just wrap up the interviews by asking the guest anything you've seen lately that you thought maybe should take maybe a careful look, or something maybe that was a little under the radar that you thought was really excellent. Netflix, Hulu, whatever, anything you could mention. I always like to get recommendations.
I mean, if you haven't seen Good Time, Good Time's amazing, but the latest Safdie Brothers movie, Uncut Gems, for cinematography, I'm telling everybody to check out The Third Wife, which Ash Mayfair's film came out last year. That'll probably be hitting VOD in the next year or so. Oh my God, this is always such a hard question because I always have like 8 million things, but
those are great. Those are great. So how can people see your latest film?
I have one more in that's out in VOD right now. Check out The Climb. Michael Corvino's The Climb. It's great. Okay.
Okay.
All right, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, so how can people see Banana Split? Do you know what the release schedule is going to be like?
So we're doing a day and date release, release that'll roll out over time. But March 27th, we are opening in a ton of theaters across the USA and Canada. And then we'll start to, more and more theaters will come out. And I know there's some health concerns. So on the, also out VOD, definitely Apple TV on March 27th. We're opening there if you want to stay home and watch it. You can watch it there. And then that'll be the sort of 52 theaters will unroll throughout the US and Canada. And then from there, Universal Home Video will take it internationally. So it'll do limited theatrical around the world and on VOD after it's run in the US and Canada.
Okay, and perfect. And what's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Twitter, Facebook, a blog, anything you're comfortable sharing?
Instagram is Benjamin Kasulke, BenjaminKasulke. Same for Twitter. And then I'm on Facebook as well, Ben Kasulke. And BenKasulke.com is under construction, but should be live within the next couple months.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, Ben, I really appreciate your coming on and talking with me today. Good luck with this film, and
Good luck with your
next. Yeah, thank you, and good luck with your next films as well.
Yeah, thanks for.
Perfect. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks so much. Take care.
Bye bye.
I just want to talk quickly about SYS Select. It's a service for screenwriters to help them sell their screenplays and get writing assignments. The first part of the service is the SYS Select Screenplay Database. Screenwriters upload their screenplays along with a logline, synopsis, and other pertinent information like budget and genre, and then producers search for and hopefully find screenplays they want to produce. Dozens of producers are in the system looking for screenplays right now. There have been a number of success stories come out of the service. You can find out about all the SYS Select successes by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/success. Also on SYS podcast episode 222, I talk with Steve Deering, who was the first official success story to come out of the SYS Select database. When you join SYS Select, you get access to the screenplay database along with all the other services that we're providing to SYS Select members. These services include the newsletter. This monthly newsletter goes out to a list of over 400 producers who are actively seeking writers and screenplays. Each SYS Select member can pitch one screenplay in this monthly newsletter. We also provide screenwriting leads. We have partnered with one of the premier paid screenwriting leads services, so I can syndicate their leads to SYS Select members. There are lots of great paid leads coming in each week from our partner. Recently, we've been getting 5 to 10 high-quality paid leads per week. These leads run the gamut. There's producers looking for a specific type of spec script to producers looking to hire a screenwriter to write up one of their ideas or properties. They're looking for shorts, features, TV, and web series, pilots, all types of projects. If you sign up for SYS Select, you'll get these leads emailed directly to you several times per week. Also, you get access to the SYS Select forum, where we will help you with your logline and query letter and answer any screenwriting related questions that you might have. We also have a number of screenwriting classes that are recorded and available in the SYS Select forum. These are all the classes that I've done over the years, so you'll have access to those whenever you want. Once you join, the classes cover every part of writing your screenplay, from concept to outlining to the first act, second act, third act, as well as other topics like writing short films and pitching your projects in person. Once again, if this sounds like something you'd like to learn more about, please go to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. Again, that is sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing director Lorcan Finnegan, who just did a film called Vivarium, starring Jesse Eisenberg and Imogen Poots. We talked through this film, how he got it going. It was an adaptation. It was something that took him many, many years to kind of get off the ground. So we really talked through that whole process. Just another inspirational story. So keep an eye out for that episode next week. To wrap things up, I just want to touch on a few things from today's interview with Benjamin. I thought it was great insight into how he broke into the industry. I hope some of this comes through in the interview, but he was very personable. Benjamin was very personable, outgoing, and just these phone calls, the impression I get, because Benjamin's not someone I know, I've never talked to him before, but we just got on the phone and he had a certain just very personable sort of rapport. And I can see him being a negative cutter, being in a post-production facility like that, filmmakers coming in and him being able to just chat him up. Because again, he seemed like a very sort of outgoing, personable person. So the lesson to me is not, you know, we should all run out and become negative cutters. I'm not sure that that job even really exists anymore, as things have moved away from film. But the bigger lesson is we should find a way to use what we have. In this case, Benjamin is very outgoing. He's personable. So this was a perfect fit for him. He could sit there. He could make a little money doing his negative cutting, and then he could get to know the local filmmakers. That's a great bit of insight, and you can see how something like that would work really well for Benjamin. It wouldn't have been a great fit for me, though. I would have sat in the back there. I would have been cutting film all day, and I never would have talked to anyone just because I know myself and I know my personality. But that's totally okay. We all need to find that place that puts us in the best position to use our talents and skills. And I'll give you an example. Last week, I mentioned I'm preparing to launch the SYS screenplay contest. I think next week I'll have a more firm announcement on that. But there's some, you know, this to me is a good example of sort of what I'm doing. You know, Negative Cutter was a good fit for Benjamin. For myself, to advance my own career, running a screenplay contest is something that could potentially help me. There's some technical stuff getting this contest all set up. Obviously, I'm good at that. I already run a website, do a podcast, so I have the technical chops to accomplish all that. I have experience running SYS, and I'm a screenwriter myself, so I'm interacting with producers on a fairly regular basis, and I'm especially familiar with low-budget producers, so that kind of plays into what I'm trying to do with this screenplay contest. So, I mean, guess what? Now I've got all of these producers that I'm talking to who want to be judges because I've got this experience running SYS and as a screenwriter myself. A lot of these guys are people I've emailed with before, not usually producers that I know very well, but they're kind of just on my lists. Emails bounce back and forth. But again, this is another chance for me to network with them and stay on the radar. For the most part, these producers know who I am. Many of them have probably never even read any of my material or anything like that. But again, I'm staying on their radar. I'm getting to know them a little bit more. Some of these people that want to be judges, some of them are going to step up and they're going to really be involved. They're going to read tons and tons of scripts. Some of them are probably going to be less involved. But either way, I'm going to get to know some of these producers. Obviously, I'm not going to enter my own contest, but I am going to, as I said, get to know these producers and start to network a little bit and potentially move my own screenwriting career together. Again, I'm using the talents that I have, you know, technical chops, experiences running SYS, experience as a screenwriter, knowing these producers. That's how I'm, you know, sort of doing something similar that Benjamin was talking about. And I think we could all do that. We could all find something that, you know, plays into our talents and skills. So to me, that's the lesson from Benjamin. Don't worry about the specifics of what a negative cutter even is, because that isn't going to help you much. But try and put yourself in a position where good things can happen. But this is going to take some self-awareness, some self-reflection about really being honest with yourself and trying to figure out what you're good at and understanding if you get a specific job or do a certain thing, is it actually going to lead to something? Because again, you could have put me in that same situation that Benjamin was in. I don't honestly think if I'd have been up there cutting film, I would have been able to network like he was, doing that exact same job, being in that exact same position. So again, just about being aware of who you are and what you're good at and what experiences, talents, skills, what you have. And again, trying to use those and put yourself in a position where just little good things can happen. Benjamin, that's what Benjamin did. Hopefully that's what all of you are doing. And hopefully you can kind of see how I'm kind of trying to do the same thing, running this podcast, running a screenplay contest, running this podcast, running the contest, running the blog, all of that is sort of my way of trying to put myself in front of yet more producers in a slightly different capacity of just, hey, will you read my script? Getting to know them and then building that relationship first. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you for listening.